I'm Dustin Zahn, and this is Trainwrecks. Be sure to check out other episodes on all your favorite streaming platforms. Follow the podcast on Instagram at trainwrecks.69. Like and subscribe, leave reviews, tell a friend, and come to my shows. I'm sorry the episodes are trickling out, but I've been a busy boy. The labels have been in full swing. The parties we're doing are selling tickets, and it's tax time. The pain is real. So I just haven't had time to get things out. In fact, I do have some episodes in the can already. The next one should be coming from Function, and then try to get some other fresh stuff after that. Hopefully some more women. I know it's been a bit of a sausage party lately, but we'll fix that. Some little bit of news right now on my end. I just got back from the U.S. I did a little tour out there. This one in particular was especially good. I did, 5 shows in about 10 days. Really good stuff. Started off Friday night in Portland at Process PDX. For those of you who don't live in the States or even that do, you know, Portland might not be the first thing you think of when it comes to dance music. That being said, they definitely had a scene back in the day, but it's firing better than ever now. Process is a really dope club. I think it fits 150, 200 people or something like that. It was completely rammed. Great show. I kind of felt like I could do whatever I wanted. You know, some of these cities where the scene is a little bit newer, you feel like, oh, you can't really go for the crazy shit, but I went for the crazy shit and it really worked out well. So that was fun. Thanks to everybody that came out. And a quick trivial note about that. I went to Portland around 2000, I believe, and to visit my, at the time, record label partner and ex producer partner, Ian Lehman. That's where we came up with the idea for my first label, Abiotic Recordings. So shout out Portland. The next night, I was back in Los Angeles for my first time in two and a half years, which is kind of crazy. I'm usually there every, 6 months to a year, so it's been a while. The welcome back was really fucking dope. I did the Observe Party, which is run by Drum Cell and Truncate, and then, of course, to getting a little bit of help from the other homies in Los Angeles. Octoform's visuals were top-notch, better than ever, really. Greg always does great stuff. If you've been to these shows, you know what to expect. Those were awesome. I shared the lineup with my partner, business partner, Centrific, and Amatic, and Mesma, and just really killer music all night long, really good vibe. With these warehouse parties, you know, some warehouses are better than others. This one in particular was really cool. Felt like just the right size. The vaulted ceilings seemed, and it just gave it a vibe that's a little more special than usual. So that was really awesome to be back. And, you know, a lot of people love to hate on LA for valid reasons, but I fucking love LA. You know what else I also really love? New York. That's right. The next weekend for Friday, I was in Public Records. That was a really cool, really heavy Minnesota-focused lineup curated by Julia Gover. It included myself in the atrium this time. And then headlining the sound room was Psych, who was back in the States for his first time in 13 years, if I'm not mistaken. Little cool trivial note there. I actually released Psych's first full EP on Enemy in 2008 or 9, and then it came with a remix from Centrific, so that was really cool to see kind of this whole full circle moment happen. Supporting that show was KXAH Christina. That was her going away party, and then we have some Minneapolis transplants that played. Got Yasmina in the, I forget what the third floor is up there, but she played up there. Echo was in the atrium, and then Ross Lonefront, as you might know him for the techno fans in the States, he played live in the sound room, and opening it up was Centrific. That was a really cool party. It was slammed. Thanks to them for making it happen and making everybody feel at home. The next day, we took our tired asses back to the airport because we were doing our own party in Minneapolis at the warehouse. Actually, that was the flight from hell, thanks to this little 2 or 3 year old kid next to me. I won't go into it, but holy hell, that was probably the worst flight in the last 6-7 years for sure. Anyway, we opened up the doors to the warehouse. Marteca Fair took over for the opening duties. She really crushed it with her set, always a fantastic DJ. And then it was my turn. I thought I played well. I got some really nice feedback. Like, sometimes, you know, you feel like, oh, you could do better at home or whatever. And, I felt like this time around, I kind of snailed it. So that was cool. After that was Sandrine, 4 hour set. She's always such a good DJ. You know, she did the closing set for us at the Great Beyond a couple years back and really crushed it. But, you know, I've seen Sandrine play numerous times over the years in Europe. Most recently, we played together in Bassiani, and I think she did like a 8 or 10 hour set or something. And we're just like, okay, when you have a DJ like that, it's a crime not to let them just spread out and play for a longer period of time. So that's exactly what we did. We tried not to overbook the lineup. And she crushed it. I mean, just 4 hours of really rolling, heady, chunky techno, you know, nothing too fast, 135 or whatever. Fantastic DJ. Can't recommend her enough if you're doing parties. And then, Centrific was on closing duties doing his usual weirdo nihilistic thing. Again, thanks to everybody that came out. I know that one was a little tough because Easter was the next day. Some people had to work and some people had to go to the family brunch and all that shit. Not me, though. I had a last-minute opportunity to go back to New York, which is kind of insane, but I took it anyway. A couple days prior to that, Aurora Halal hit me up and she said, yo, DJ Hell's supposed to come play for me in the States. I forget why it didn't happen, maybe a visa thing or something. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, she's like, can you come play our sustained release party at Nowadays? I said, why the hell not? I was completely exhausted and half in the bag, but I got on the plane anyway and arrived just in time for my set. And wow, yeah, that club is fantastic. The set was so much fun. You know, it's definitely something more like I would play at Panorama Bar or Communion, you know, more in that like sort of happy, vibey type thing, but a little bit more kick in the ass to it because I really feel like that's what Sunday nights need, you know, real festive. Can't say enough good things about it, the whole tour and that weekend in general, you know. The United States is on fire. Sometimes the gigs are hit or miss, but this was just one of them where every one of them was good. You know, there's moments where you're locked in. Sometimes you're just scrolling forever, and you're like, I don't know what to play next. This one wasn't like that. Good stuff. Damn, I've been talking for a while. I'm going to rush through it. Enemy Records, the latest is out from Dower, Dehour, it's called Collateral Pleasure. It's been getting rinsed like crazy. He's also got a new one coming out on Renee Wise's label, Moving Pressure. Check that out. Then we got a new EP coming up from Braille, aka Gentian. That one drops at the end of April, which is taking a lot of people by surprise. And then for the last, actually no, there's probably a couple more, but at the end of May we have an NMA debut from Decoder. It's 6 tracks of techno bliss. I'm gonna announce more on that soon. But for those of you who are just checking out, stay tuned. And real quickly, a couple things I have to plug. Kiosk Radio in Belgium. Really, we're looking at 3 weeks ago now. I got to do this, and I haven't really had a chance to plug it because I was super ill and on the road. This is another hour that's kind of similar to my Lot Radio show. but maybe a little bit more housey this time around. It's like dubby, housey, deep techno, feel good stuff. Nothing too crazy and no intense mixing, just good background stuff. So be sure to check that out. That's actually, I think, exclusively on YouTube right now. Got another podcast dropping. If it's not out by the time this podcast, it will be for Upper Berry. This one's an excerpt from a night where I played from beginning to end, and I wanted to highlight my tastes in other forms of electronic music. So the podcast shows how I move fluidly between ambient, experimental, drum and bass, gray area beats, etc., and then straight into house and finally a little bit of techno. The mix is full of major tempo swings, key changes, time signature changes, you know, all that kind of shit. I hope you enjoy it. Lastly, the Great Beyond Festival, that is sold out. You can still get on the wait list for tickets if you go to the Great Beyond website and click on the ticketing option. That's for people who are reselling them. Good luck getting in. I won't dive into it too much just because I've been ranting for a while here. And, well, it's sold out. If you don't have a ticket, it's going to be tough to get in. Other than that, welcome back to the Friendship Simulator. On this week's episode, Blue Hour is back. He came on the podcast when I kind of first restarted it with Philip Apacho. This time he's back on his own. He's got a new album to promote called Selva. It's on his label, Blue Hour, which he started in 2013. He's a guy that came from Bristol, made the trek over to Berlin about the same time as me, around 15, 16 years ago, something like that. And he hasn't left, and he's indebted to techno now as much as I am. So I wanted to chat with him about the album, what's getting him going right now musically, when he's going to try and go for certain things, because sometimes he's into trancey stuff, sometimes it's breakbeaty stuff, sometimes it's techno. So how do you get to those points? Also, you know, he's a big fan of art. He takes the art curation seriously on his labels and whatnot. And I always like the visual aspect too. So we got to talk about that a bit. Let's just jump into it, right? Have a good one. All right. Welcome to the show, or welcome back, I should say.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming in. I know we were talking about it for a while now, but good reason to come back this time is you got a new album out.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about that today. Selva is the name of the title, mm-hmm. right?
And yeah, Selva, yeah.
Is it your first solo album?
Yeah, first one. I mean, yeah, I've been doing this for a while now. Started the project in 2011, but only been releasing EPs up until this point, basically. So, yeah, first proper album, long overdue, I'd say.
Nice. And all those EPs for others are primarily on
Blue Hour as well. Yeah, mostly.
Yeah.
I did some splits, and I did one EP with Dold as well on his label, Arsenic. But that's generally right. Most of the output has always been self-released, yeah.
Awesome. And as a label owner, you know, putting out an album would be like a bigger project. Did you feel comfortable with like doing that, or what did you feel? I mean, how did that go for you compared to EPs?
Yeah, I mean, I guess with approaching an album, I've always kind of tried to avoid it just because it just seems like such a huge amount of pressure, especially on the first one, to like push over the line. But yeah, I talk about it a little bit with this album, and it kind of came around by accident. I just sort of, you know, as we all do, just casually kind of writing tunes. And yeah, there was one thing that I did right at the start around end of 2024, which was The Chase, a track that features on the album, and had a bit of a vibe to it that I quite liked. And I wanted to kind of maybe build some sort of EP around that kind of concept. And then, yeah, just had like writer's block for like 6 months or something like that. Didn't really attempt much music, was busy doing other stuff. And then, yeah, I started writing a group of tracks, and that kind of fitted into the concept. And then by that point, I was like, okay, I have this sort of, you know, EP kind of ready now almost. But yeah, there was something about it which kind of felt a bit different and could be expanded upon. So I was just like, yeah, let's go for it, make it into a full LP. And it kind of flowed a bit more easily than just trying to, on the outset, just be like, right, I'm going to make an LP now. I think if I had that mindset and approach, it would have, yeah, been a lot harder, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because it's like, you know, I think everybody has different ways of how it comes about with an album. Like, sometimes it's really, really hard to make it happen, especially if it's an emotional thing. And then other times they just, you know, my last one I did in roughly 4 days, just kind of flowed out. Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, this next one has been years. So, yeah. But, it sounds like it came pretty natural, but you said you split up the writing process a bit. Was it actually pretty natural for those tracks to come together, or did you find yourself having to be like, how do I get myself back into the headspace of those first few tracks I wrote?
It was just flowing. Yeah, after that kind of gap of like 6 months or something, so like around 2025 summer, everything started to come together like really quite quickly. I mean, I'm still quite a slow writer in general, but I think, yeah, over the course of like a few months, I had all the tracks there and had a clear idea about what needed to happen. And then from that point on, it was just kind of refining and a bit of mixing and stuff like that. So it was finished towards the end of last year, 2025.
Okay, cool. And then, yeah, so it started off as a collection of tracks. At what point did you realize like, oh, this is actually an album? Because I had a sort of a similar experience with mine, mm-hmm. where like I said, I started writing tracks and I'm like, maybe it'll just be an EP. Then you sit back. And in my case, everything shared a common language because I was going on a concept. Was that similar for you?
Or? Yeah, exactly. Basically, yeah, once I had this sort of EP, I was just like, this shouldn't be an EP. It should be something else. And yeah, I only needed to like add a few more to really bring it into the album territory, I guess. So yeah, from that point, it was pretty smooth, and yeah, I had a pretty strong idea about what needed to happen and just gone with it, basically.
Awesome. And the title, Selva, what's up with the title?
Yeah, well, it's derived from, it's a Spanish and Portuguese term for like a dense rainforest, basically. And this sort of idea of the rainforest was apparent to me in the writing process and something that I leaned quite heavily into. And yeah, also the artwork, which Hayden Martin developed, kind of represents that idea as well. And yeah, it was trying to sort of convey some sort of mystical, supernatural, dense, warm, hot environment, lots of organic material, and yeah, some sort of mysterious sort of voyage through the jungle. And I kind of, while I was writing, I had different tracks that kind of gave different stories to me, whether it was, you know, going through or discovering some sort of cave or coming across some sort of tribal community or some psychedelic experience or whatever it was.
Or mechanical elves, maybe.
Mechanical elves, yeah. True. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, yeah, a few different sort of ideas and themes that tie into some of the track ideas, and yeah, helps to kind of bring them all together in some sort of cohesive narrative. And it feels quite cinematic for me, like as I was writing or as I was kind of reflecting on the music that I did, I kind of, yeah, would create these sort of stories. Oh, this track kind of feels like this, or this track feels like that kind of thing. So yeah, it's just something that I kind of let evolve naturally and then lean into and try and bring out a bit more, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I totally got that in the album. You know, you have, I mean, it's very, despite being very electronic, it feels alive and very organic, you know. And like, we're actually, he brought me a copy of the record, thank you, and welcome. We're looking at the artwork right now. I think Hayden crushed it on the artwork as well.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Getting that atmosphere to it, because it seems very rooted in reality, but also at the same time, they're like, hey, there's another layer here. All right, Ronnie, my cat is he wants to hang out with
Luke. To say hello.
Take a hike,
hello.
Buddy. He didn't get his TV time with me this morning. Down. Sorry about that.
Oh, so good. Cutie.
That's true. Where, you know, you were at the last quote unquote podcast studio before, but I shifted gears for a minute. So
yeah,
we got guests here. just looking at my notes here. Amazon Jungle Vibes, like you brought it up. I see the aesthetic pop up from time to time now, and I'm a fan of it because I feel like everything with techno is so indebted in like concrete cities and shit like that. And which is cool.
I mean, space as well, right?
And space, all spaceships and graffiti buildings and stuff. And that's cool, but there's something about nature, especially when you get out there, it's like really expansive and psychedelic, and I feel like you're really taking that journey here.
Yeah, I guess so. I think, like, I don't really know why the idea of the Amazon or like a Mayan sort of jungle came about, really. It just kind of appeared, and it's just something that I followed in the process. I mean, I wasn't trying to recreate like tribal techno jams or anything like that, or like be really authentic in the use of percussion that I was using, that kind of techno world, basically. It was more trying to get across this sort of dense atmospheric kind of idea.
Like a feeling, maybe.
Yeah. And also I think that like part of it was some sort of mental escapism, maybe, away from, city life and the normal kind of day-to-day experience that I have. Not to say that it's like super boring or anything, but like, yeah, I think like the mind wanders, you know, and I think creatively I was kind of moving to something quite contrasting and different to my normal environments. But yeah, I was also in sort of tropical locations for part of the writing experience. It's not like I was sat in the Amazon with my headphones on and just kind of writing and soaking in the atmosphere. It was more like a kind of holiday thing, and yeah, it wasn't even in the Amazon at all, but there was definitely some sort of like tropical element to areas where I were, which was parts of Indonesia and India. But and I think that kind of came about and informed the music a little bit, but it wasn't like the main fundamental sort of part of the writing experience necessarily. I think it was more centered around this idea of mental escapism. And I've talked about it as well in a written form interview, but I think
Where can they check that out?
Oh yeah, so one of them just got published today, Parkett Channel. That's an Italian kind of online magazine. It's also available in English, I think, as well. And then I did like another interview on Juno Daily, Juno the Shop. And they've got like a little blog behind their store, basically. And that came out like about a week ago. But yeah, like this idea that the rainforest is almost like a macro version of like the universe, and maybe helps me to, helps me to explain something in a more digestible way, which helps to feel kind of connected. I think that was also part of some sort of writing idea that I had in my mind, or something that came out afterwards, which I kind of realized the fact that, the rainforest is sort of like a macro version of the wider world, and like an easier, setting it in that sort of place is maybe an easier way to kind of describe what was going on with like the storytelling and things like that.
I totally get that. And I mean, I think, rainforests are something on a huge scale, but compared to planet Earth and all its biomes, it's obviously not as big. But I think world building is super important, with artists like Burial and stuff. He did his work on world building, and even like you take somebody like Quentin Tarantino, he's a dude that will write like whole novels of backstory just for his scripts.
Okay,
For him to write the script on, and then also to maybe the actors read it, Cliff Booth from the last Once Upon a Time in Hollywood movie. There's a whole thing about that. And apparently I think there's a Netflix series coming, but it was like, here's the whole backstory, and then it makes that character believable. Mm. And you think, okay, maybe that's pointless or too much work for something, but when
it helps to build like a strong foundation, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
And then all of a sudden this character becomes so much more realistic, Or in video games where you have so much extra dialogue that it becomes more immersive. And I think with the album like this, just building out a world or really overthinking things can actually, in a subliminal way, increase the weight of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, a lot of it kind of came around quite subconsciously, I guess. There wasn't really this sort of set out agenda to like do something there in that space in the rainforest necessarily. But yeah, just things and ideas came through subconsciously and just allowing them to appear naturally and follow that instinct and yeah, just channel into them, I guess.
Yeah. You were saying that even though you didn't write it in the rainforest, were you in like some tropical conditions, you said?
Yeah. Me and my wife quite like to get away in the colder months of the winter in Berlin, like everyone. And yeah, we're quite lucky to be able to do so and can sort of center that around some like gigs and stuff as well. So yeah, part of that was in Bali, which is obviously quite a tropical kind of island. And then, yeah, I was playing in India and spent a bit of time in Goa. And I think the last track I did, Submerged, kind of was finished there.
Okay, cool. I mean, I think I've always told people, if you have the ability, both with time and your personal resources like money and stuff, to take your passion or your art elsewhere, whether you're a writer or a musician or a painter or something, and do it in another location just to remove yourself from the strongholds of daily life, it'll drastically change everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Like, I feel like it's super necessary for anyone because it's just, yeah, it helps to avoid stagnation, I guess. And it's also something that, like, I've done in the past and found, like, really helpful just to, like, go away and do, like, a writing session somewhere. I think one of the EPs that I did, I'm trying to think which one it was, Devotion. I think that came out in, like, just before the pandemic or just after. But yeah, I went to Portugal and just went glamping on my own to this little place this dude had set up. There was just like a few kind of tents there, or like nice kind of glamping tents. And it was like really in nature. And I just went for walks every day, came back, set up my laptop on the terrace, which had like a kind of open kitchen area, and was just, yeah, just laptop and headphones and just, yeah, did some music. And I think learning from that experience also like helps to remind me that it's really good just to kind of leave your normal day-to-day situation. And like, you know, it's just about having experiences, I guess, in general, and just whatever those experiences might be. You don't necessarily need to go far in order to have them. You can just, you know, go to your local like art gallery, get some different impressions, different inspiration from somewhere, and just, yeah, break up the normality of things in some way. Totally. And bring about some new interest and, you know, open yourself up to seeing and hearing and experiencing different things, I guess. And that's going to help inform your music, whether or not you directly get inspired by something. I mean, you know, the record Devotion was not necessarily connected to the like holiday that I had in Portugal, but yeah, it's just something about that action or just doing it just helps to kind of invigorate you on a creative level.
Totally. I mean, even I think, you know, for example, being in Berlin, if you take your ass to the park, that can go quite far. Einstein, he thought of the theory of relativity over at Triptauer Park over here.
Some
tree, you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
I didn't know that.
Be done. That's what I'm told. Yeah. Don't look it up on the internet. Somebody told me that at the bar, so it's true. Okay. But I'm pretty sure it's true. But yeah,
I'd like to believe that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I want to too. I like the fact that crazy shit happened in this city. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The album leans in pretty heavily on tribal techno and dance floor themes. Obviously, some moments where it isn't the case, but it seems like you were really just focused on that, which leads into some more of the themes of the Amazon and tribes or something like that. But it seems like being like overly excessive and genre bending and showing off things as a producer was like a little bit less of a concern on this album. Does that seem like the case?
How do you mean? Sorry. Like
not, you didn't have this like crazy experimental music, like most forward thinking.
No, not at all. Like I'm in some people, you know, very much like that, trying to be, you know, genre defining or like really trying to present something completely new and push sound to its like limits and, you know, do crazy things. But that kind of element of sound design or music production is not really where I'm at as a person, I guess. Not to say that I don't appreciate those things, but I think I just wanted to convey something that was like more honest and authentic. And yeah, I think that's pretty representative. Like the sound of the record is pretty representative of, you know, where I am. There's no like crazy mad skills and tricks necessarily. And like, you know, like mostly it's some basic kind of effects that help to create the sound of the record to make it cohesive in its sound design. You know, just like restricting myself to using a couple of different types of delay and reverb and making it consistent around the tracks. You know, pulling up like the usual kind of things that most people do in techno, like classic kind of drum machines, like Roland stuff, and and also some percussive samples. And then, yeah, there's some synths. What were some of the ones that I was using? There's a Tau sampler and there's a kind of pack. I can't remember what it's called, but it's available on their website. And I think it just pulls like lots of stuff that used to be on the old Akai samplers. One of the flute sort of sounds, Asian flute sounds. I can never pronounce the actual name for it. Shakuri, yeah, something like that. And there was also, what was the other, one of the other synths that I was using? One of the Nord things, I guess, emulations. So it was pretty simple in its construction. And I didn't try to do anything kind of overly impressive from like a sound design point of view, or like really, try and present something extremely new or like something that sounded, you know, like very new, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everything,
trying to reinvent
everything
the wheel.
Was quite familiar, I think, still on the record in terms of the sounds, like and I think that's maybe one of the qualities where people can also relate to it as well.
I agree with you on all that. I think that you know, so it has some familiar things to it, but it's all about doing it well and having like the sincerity, but also conveying a feeling, which I think a lot of dance music kind of forgets these days, especially as the plugins get better and you can do crazier shit. People don't actually ever really have, they have good ideas, but not great ideas. But then they cover up, they try to go the extra mile by throwing extra plugins or sounds, which you're like, oh, that sounds really cool. But then you're like, does it get your heart pumping, you know? On the plane back from America, I watched the new Red Hot Chili Peppers documentary.
Oh, I also saw that.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm not even a big Peppers fan, but it was entertaining. You know, there's one part in there where Flea talks about, which by the way, it's funny, I always thought that he was like the most psychotic, drug-induced one of all of them, and he was the most level-headed.
Insane. Like, yeah, he's the one that appears to be the most kind of like crazy on stage.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the voice of reason, which is scary. Anyway, he quit the band for a minute because he's like, yo, this stuff's kind of lame. It doesn't get the heart pumping, you know? And then he joined this other band, Fear, because they were like, there was actual feeling. And then they came back and they did it and became big and all that.
Crazy story that, like, I wasn't too familiar with Red Hot Chili Peppers. I mean, everyone knows the songs, but the backstory about it. But pretty interesting documentary for sure.
Totally. Anyway, they was talking about like how it's got to have, like, you really got to feel it and the fans got to feel it. And I mean, it's sometimes it's nice to hear that spoken out loud again, because that's always kind of been my thing. And especially as I get older and I kind of keep listening to the shit I grew up with, you're like, why is it good? And it's like, oh yeah, it strikes a chord.
You know,
kind of the same with your album here. It's like, okay, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but it's like trying to hit that mood, which you were very focused on, even with the artwork and everything.
Absolutely. I mean, that was definitely, and always has been, like one of the main sort of driving factors for my music. It doesn't matter about like, you know, trying to overly impress people with like the newest cutting edge sound design stuff, tools, whatever, plugins. But yeah, just to bring about like a really authentic and deep and personal sort of feeling and try and convey that in your music. I think when you do that, like all the other stuff doesn't really matter as much.
Totally.
You kind of, I think some people in fact just like make up for a lack of depth or authenticity in their music through the other way around,
that's
like using
what I'm
all the crazy stuff.
And I tried and I made some of that, those kind of tracks. I'm like, well, is that they sound cool, but that no one's going to touch this shit 3 months from now, much less 3 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But also I would say, don't sell yourself too short, because your work as Tracing Circles, there's like a lot more genre bending and like cool sound design and stuff like that. And
yeah, that's true. I think I could probably thank Simon, my partner, who I do the project for that. He's more into that sort of side of things. And we find a balance together, I guess, to bring it together in a meaningful way and give it some sort of depth.
Which, by the way, quick shout out to him and Ina. I get to stay in Berlin a little bit longer because of them. So if you want to live your techno dream or Silicon LA, hit them up.
Expats in Wonderland.
Wonderland? Yeah. Okay,
big shout out.
Big shout out. They'll get you sorted out, hopefully. But also, speaking of Tracing Circles, this weekend I played at Nowadays in New York. I played that old track of yours, Airlock.
Oh, yeah.
That cool. went off, man.
Oh,
that
awesome.
Was like
oh, it's
epic
nice to know
Sunday
people
night
still
vibes.
That.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's cool. It's got a vibe to it.
Yeah.
Very, you know, UK sounding, but still in a good way. And again, it goes back to feeling like there's sound design and stuff, but it's undeniable that there's an emotion that is attached to it.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah, we haven't done some music for a while, but yeah, maybe now that this album is sort of out of the way and out into the world, then I can start to think about other projects. And I'd definitely like to do some more music with Simon, although he's got two kids, so yeah, it can be a bit tricky.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I have zero kids and I can't even get anything done. What about musical influence for this album? Was there anything you were listening to that got you going?
Not so much like listening to during the actual process, but just things that have, I guess, stuck with me for a long time that I've kind of carried through my life in some sort of way. And it's only really after kind of finishing the tracks or even that, you know, the whole album that I'm kind of reminded about certain things that might have influenced it. And they're definitely quite subtle. But yeah, like, I'll try and think. Like, the first track, and I talked about this in Sean Ronaldo's First Floor newsletter because he invited me to participate in his Has Better Taste kind of feature, which basically he invites people to pick a record and talk about it, and it's like Blue Hour has better taste than I do or whatever. It's like a bit of a catchy title.
Do you?
Thing. I doubt it. I mean, he's got like impeccable taste and has a insane amount of knowledge with music. But it's a cool little feature to be part of anyway. And yeah, the track was it's called The Rope Titans, and it was a Shackleton track. And the remix was by Badawi. I guess that's how you say it. So the first track and a bit of the last track on the album, so Arrival and Portal, I think was subconsciously a little bit inspired by that one, which brings me back to sort of my Bristol days when I went to university and dubstep was kind of popping off, but Bristol also had its own sort of take on that. And although Shackleton is not necessarily from Bristol, I think he's from Leeds. And Badawi, I guess, is American, maybe.
I have no idea
but
about that part.
Skull Disco, the label, was kind of seen as a Bristol-based label, seen as Apple Blim, who co-founded it with Shackleton, was based at the time. And yeah, there's definitely bits of this track which have sort of become apparent to me that had influenced Arrival and Portal. And then, like the second track, Hidden Passage, I think it's called. I could change the titles a little bit.
Is that the one with the like kind of Jeff Mills snap sound in it?
Like a finger click.
Yeah.
That's Crimson Delta.
Okay, I played that a lot. Actually, I've been opening my sets with Arrival quite a bit because tour, because I knew as soon as the album comes out, I wouldn't have that chance anymore.
Yeah.
So
fair enough.
You get a couple of those.
It's quite an intense brooding sort of vibe. Sets are quite a dark edge for the set, I guess. I've also opened it with it a couple of times. But it does that job quite well, I think. Yeah, like Hidden Passage, the second track, I think it's called. There's a bit of like Source Direct influence, I guess, and a bit of the sort of stepping drum work, kind of, I guess, again, from like the dubstep sort of era that I kind of participated in a little bit previous to Blue Hour. For sure, like a bit of Mills or Sandwell influence on Crimson Delta. The Chase has got like a bell kind of carrying throughout the track. It's a bit kind of Regis-y or Jeff Mills-y, I guess. So that was like a bit of like a subconscious influence. Trying to think. Yeah, the next one was... the next track. Lost Beneath the Leaves, sorry, yeah.
It's all good.
So this one, also I think there's a bit of my sort of early dubstep kind of influence in that one. Maybe Submerged is perhaps the more trancey one on the album. Dreamscape, the more sort of dubby. And I think Portal also has, there's like a track by Nothing, which has like a monk kind of choir vocal. And I think that sort of subconsciously influenced Portal as well, because there's also like a part on that track which has that. But none of these things were like, oh, I want to do, you know, include a part that has that reference to that track or that artist. It's just, you know, stuff that I've carried with me, sometimes more longer term. Other things have been popped up more recently. But it's only when the tracks are kind of finished and I'm able to just like reflect on them a little bit, or the whole album as a whole, where I'm starting to be reminded about like different things that feature in the tracks, which are connected to some of my sort of previous influences or current influences even.
That's a nice little roundup for the record. I mean, yeah, it definitely seems like there's some obvious influences on the sleeve, but not in like solely relying on it. And just knowing your catalog from the last, 13 years now, seeing you go through it all from beat and banging techno to like almost full on trancey moments to whatever, it seems like it kind of encapsulates a bunch of those.
Yeah, influences. Definitely. I think it definitely tries to sort of, kind of bring about all those different sides of techno, and it's sort of, how can you say it? Yeah, the things adjacent to that I've been interested in and where I've come from musically as well, with the UK kind of background. And, you know, my early experimentations in music production as Fresh Air and Esoteric, that are a bit more dubstep aligned. And I think, that carries forward in the record too, which, I think is quite nice to kind of show that side a little bit. And it just came about quite naturally. And it's a little kind of hint, a little nod to my past, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you've done a variety of other things, like especially we just brought up, like Tracing Circles, for example. When you do those other projects or other EPs that lean in other directions, have you found that it like really freed you up to make sure like the techno remains techno, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I have no real qualms about like experimenting in different styles. Like, I think it's quite healthy for anyone to do. I'm not like techno purist at all. Like, I really respect people who are able just to stick to one thing and they just do that. And, you know, they keep refining and perfecting that. And maybe there's some new evolvement in that sound in subtle ways. But, for me to keep things interesting for myself and, you know, just to be reflective of like, you know, what I'm into and what I'm enjoying, It's been fun to just experiment and try out different things. I mean, some stuff has, you know, just been like completely one-off explorations where I've just like made jungle tracks or whatever, or gone like fully into trance on certain things. But techno always seems to be the point where I end up coming back to. So it's kind of the anchor for my music and style, I guess. But I'm not afraid to sort of push the boundaries of working in adjacent sort of genres and styles. And even if it's for brief periods or, you know, one-off explorations or collaborations, I think it's quite fun to do that. And it keeps things interesting for myself. And, you know, you meet different people through those experiences. You play different parties based on, you know, like what you're known for at the time, I guess. Like anyone, I just really love electronic music, and there's many different aspects to it outside of techno. And there's a plenty of stuff to explore. And yeah, I like doing that.
Nice. I mean, so obviously as a producer, you're not opposed to it, as you just mentioned, when it comes to DJ sets. And of course, when you get booked on the road, promoters and club goers, they kind of have their own expectations of what a DJ is going to bring to the party.
Yeah, for sure.
And being willing to jump around maybe a little bit, you know, all the whole spectrum of techno, or even just fully going into that genre, as you mentioned. Have you experienced moments where you try to do that and they're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. I think it can be quite confusing in a sort of, let's say, like a strategic kind of DJ booking type situation.
Are they learning from this though? Like, when are you finding it easier to do that as you do it more, or not really?
I would say more recently at the moment, I've been playing more techno only. Of course, there's been some parties in the past where it's been more appropriate to play like other things. And sometimes, you know, I've been booked to, play Panorama Bar, and I've like played like more house or like ravey stuff, which I've really, really liked. But I think like in the past few years, there was definitely a lot of diversity in the kind of lineups, and a mixture of different people coming from different places all coming together to put on a night, and for there to be a broad range of dance music, let's say. But I feel like at the moment things are sort of tightening up a little bit, especially around like me and what I'm doing, and it feels more appropriate and right, and I feel more motivated and interested to play more techno only, I guess. And I think like also that's part of like maybe realigning my profile a little bit after sort of having a little dip in my toes in the trance world. I would love to have opportunities to try and do different things. You know, like I love to be able to be invited to play Panorama Bar, and that's happened like a couple of times now. And it's just super refreshing to like pull out all these tracks that you love that you never really get a chance to play on a techno floor, let's say. And I would be super down to like play like a jungle set, even somewhere for like a jungle night or
nice one-off
a UK, or like a UK hardcore set or something like that. Obviously those opportunities don't really come around so often, and it's maybe nice just to save sort of for like a special occasion, but it's still something that I really enjoy doing and like a lot. But yeah, predominantly techno sets in techno clubs on a techno lineup is where I'm at these days.
Yeah, same. I mean, I share same sentiments. I last weekend on my tour, I played everything from beat and stuff that you'd probably hear here in Berlin at the techno clubs to, one night at Public Records, it was mainly house. And then, for the lack of better wording, like trancey, tribally kind of stuff at Nowadays and whatever. And being able to do that all in one weekend has been really cool, but it's something that comes with a lot of time, and also just kind of drilling it in. Like, I think anybody that's interested in showing the the depth of what they're into. It's like sliding some of those things into your podcasts or even onto your records, kind of like you have. And then it just gets fans used to the idea that that might come up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then with time, people expect that. Or, you know, because like if you're playing a whole ass techno party with like purists and stuff, and then you drop one of those trance records you're into, might send a couple of them to the bar or whatever, yeah, which is fine. But like if they know to expect that, then they might even be into it. Who knows?
Yeah. Know? I think it's just about reading the room, I guess, and like understanding the sort of party that you're playing at and what's going to be possible or not. And,
100%.
And then how confident you are at kind of trying to push those limits or push out of your comfort zone at certain times. I can imagine somewhere like nowadays being quite a free sort of environment to be able to experiment and just, yeah, people can suck up whatever you throw at them to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not going to pretend that I know much about it, but I started off, or when I got there, I'm like, okay, there's no way I'm going to actually, well, I wasn't going to be playing your album there. You know, I mean, it's a little too banging for that. But, you know, I think also just like you said, reading the room, sometimes like as a DJ, it can be really fun. You get this new, maybe it's an old record that's new to you or some new thing, like, oh man, this is like, I can't wait to play this one for the weekend. Then you get there and you kind of know that like this isn't the gig to be dropping in, but you're like, fuck it, I'm going to see if I can do it anyway. And then you're like, oh yeah, I probably should have held off on this one.
It's worth a try. It's good. I think it's always good to take risks because I think, you can learn from that. And sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. And I think rather than just like playing it safe and playing into the expectations of the crowd all the time can be a little bit, boring.
And you start to hate it too.
Yeah. So it's good to kind of, push yourself and push other people and see what happens in the process.
One more question about the album before we get into other topics. You know, I ask this especially to people who are in the process of the whole album thing, and people say that albums don't matter anymore. I always say it's bullshit.
I think they matter more than ever now, actually, to some extent. I mean, people's attention spans are like a lot shorter, and EPs have seemed to become albums. Or there's like 6, 7, 8 tracks on an EP,
some of them.
But you know, like, does it have the kind of cohesive narrative and storytelling like an album does? A lot of the time, in my opinion, or the stuff that I've come across recently, it just doesn't. And, it's just a way for labels to kind of soak up a lot of music from producers and just get it out there and try and make the release like more monetized. Yeah.
Monetize
more. Yeah. Content, just like more, you know? And, the album is only 8 tracks as well. So it's not like it's a 12 track album. Albums can be many more tracks. I mean, I think like the minimum track for an album really, it's about 7 tracks, and you know, like a playtime of like 40 minutes or something like that.
21 and 7 tracks.
Yeah,
that's for the Grammy, whatever. I'm guessing you didn't submit for a Grammy this year, but
no, not this year. No,
maybe next time. But yeah, so the other part of it is like, you know, people say, yeah, but people don't listen to albums front to back anymore, which I get it, and they just take 1 or 2 tracks and move on, which we're all guilty of that. There was plenty of albums back in the day where there was one hit wonders in all genres and stuff, but there are a lot of great albums from people, and I feel like for me the idea of listening to 1 or 2 tracks from an album and then moving on is like watching 1 or 2 episodes of a series and then moving on. I'm like, well, if you really like those 2 episodes of Breaking Bad, you got to watch the whole thing. And then you realize like how great whatever show is, or you know what I mean? And
yeah, for sure.
It's wild to me. And also you just develop a greater appreciation for whoever it is that you're into, I think. Well, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, anyone that's been following me over the years, it's nice to dive into something in a deeper way, in a longer format. But I guess like with albums, I'm definitely guilty of the fact of like just pulling out a couple of tracks from people. But I think also just the process of doing an album is so much more of a personal thing that an artist needs to go through themselves. They don't necessarily do it for like others. Mm-hmm. I guess it's like something that you kind of do for yourself, or at least this is how I felt about it when I did Selva. And yeah, you just hope that it like resonates and clicks with people. I mean, people are more than welcome just to grab, you know, a couple of tracks off it and do what they want with it, and they don't need to listen to the whole thing. But if they do, they'll have a different experience with it. And I think that's the same case for like many other people's albums. And yeah, if you're not kind of listening to something in its entirety, you're kind of, yeah, not really getting the full picture or the full story. We're quite quick to just sort of pick away at people's creative output and find uses for it in different ways, whether it's digging and DJing or you know, just, you know, building our collections of favorite tracks. But yeah, we've definitely lost a bit of the patience, I think, of listening to albums.
Totally.
And I think with electronic music or like techno, it's such a debated format whether it kind of like works compared to, you know, other traditional kind of genres, I guess. But I think it does. And I just think that you need to like, yeah, have some cohesion and storytelling across the groups of tracks, and yeah, have a consistent vibe and energy behind it. And yeah, I mean, just be authentic in your kind of expression of like what you're trying to get across.
100%. I mean, you know, maybe I'm guilty of over romanticizing albums to some degree, but I really do believe like the best ones do have some sort of heavy context to them. Not necessarily saying sadness or happiness or something, but like, you know, there's something that exudes like an actual artistic feeling to it versus like, I just was like going to throw some stab synths over some kick drums and call it a day and put the album out, which a lot of people do. And if that works for them, that's fine. But you also said it too. You're like, DJs finding uses for this. And that's really, even at the feedback, they don't really look at an album, try to understand what was going on. They're just like, ah, yes, I'll try to fit tracks 2 and 3 into my sets. And it's for their usage. Like, how can they do it?
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, the idea of ownership of music or the ideas behind it's a real thing, because it's like even with songs where there's lyrics and stuff, like the minute, you know, there's the creation of music, you know, that's happening. And then there's when the song is written and like you or I own the song, like this is what we believe it is. And then once you give it to the world, it's no longer ours. Yeah, it's what they get out of it.
Yeah.
That's why you think like, oh, you're listening to a love song, but it's actually about someone that died. These things like misinterpretations.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's not just about DJs. People just take things out of context all the time. And
yeah, and they create their own context from it for their own lives and their own experience, I guess. And they make it relate to them in a personal way. And I guess that's a positive thing. And
it can be done in a cool way. Yeah. You know, I've definitely seen my music dropped in ways where I was like, that was not the intention, but you're like, that is interesting or cool. But then there's other times where I'm like, I wish you would have kind of looked at the other stuff on the record. You know,
I have a friend who's working in drum and bass. Is one of my oldest friends. He used to do a duo project called Spectrosol, and now the last few years he's been doing solo project called Workforce. Big shout out to Jack. And I mean, he's got quite a few albums under his belt now, but his kind of approach is just like, you know, you write your tracks and your music, you get your group of tracks, you put together your best tracks and you put it out as an album and don't overthink it. And that's another approach, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
But I mean, it works. You know, there was one person I was trying to sign at the label who I think is super talented. And I like this old school way of A&R, like picking it, making it set right. And this person's like, no, I got a ton of music. Like, I'm trying to get it out as quickly as possible. I don't really care if the tracks match on the record so well. Like, if the people like it, they'll get it. I'm like, that's fucking insane.
Mm.
But it's working for them, it seems. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I guess, the more kind of touch points of engagement that you can create in this sort of modern music world, the more you can kind of keep, like, tapping on people's shoulders and sort of being like, I'm here. And if you're only kind of coming around with like one album every 3 years and that's your only offering, or every 2 years, then you're not engaging with people as regularly, but hopefully you're engaged with them on a much stronger level.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, that now there's rumors of new boards of Canada about to drop. And that's really probably the only thing I've actually been looking forward to in the last decade. I was like, when's up? What's up with the new BOC? You know, like a lot of these other musicians and bands, I could give a shit about their new album. I'll check it out. But, you know, even the last one I thought was really fantastic. And so there is something to be said for like only putting it out when it's good. But I feel like you have to accept that touring and popularity might not be in your near future if you're not putting stuff out somewhat regularly.
Yeah, you know? For sure. Yeah, something to consider, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're into art. You've done a little bit of designing as well.
Yeah, but I guess so.
I don't know. I mean, like, it comes up. You got taste in art.
Yeah, I did. So I studied photography and fine art at college, and then I went to university and studied graphic design, basically. And I worked in the graphic design industry for, I guess, like a year or two after uni, and then came to Berlin and did a couple of other things in the sort of digital sort of design space before I sort of ended up quitting and just doing music full time.
Why'd you quit?
Just shit job.
It's
e-commerce graphic design job. I mean, yeah. I met some amazing people there, one of which, Simon, who I do Tracing Circles with. We were ex-colleagues, and I've got some really amazing friends that I've made, you know, doing these crap jobs. But in terms of like something really expressive or creative, graphic design-wise, it was more kind of like commercial sort of stuff. I mean, I do a bit of like stuff for, you know, I did the typography layout for my record. Hayden did the main visual, Hayden Martin. But so I still kind of, have some skills to be able to do some basic stuff. But in terms of generating some sort of imagery as complex or as imaginative as, or creative as, you know, the music that I hope to achieve to make. it's not quite on that level, I guess. I come from like a creative background in general, I guess. But music seemed to be the thing that took over everything else and where I'm predominantly working within.
Yeah. I mean, I have a similar trajectory in high school. I was like a art student and shit like that. And I actually paid for my first drum machines and samplers and stuff by doing graphic design and web design. And, you know, it really got to a point where, especially when YouTube came around, everybody was like learning just how to do crazy shit with Photoshop and Illustrator and all that. And I'm like, I just can't keep up. I can critique it very well, but I can't keep up with it. But like music, I was like, I got some feet with this. So let's do that.
I kind of feel similarly, to be honest. There's so many, you know, so many people out there who are insanely talented. I mean, unless you really devote yourself to that kind of one specific thing, you're not going to be able to kind of keep up or compete or whatever it is. But just, you know, get the best out of yourself.
Yeah.
Unless you're fully committed to sort of, one thing. But I still dip my toes in a few bits and bobs. Did a bit of photography the other day randomly.
I keep thinking about buying a camera. So watch out, world.
Yeah.
Instagram, I'm sorry if that happens. Is there anybody in particular like that you would shout out as far as artists or designers that you're like particularly into right now?
I've quite been into Connie Meyer's paintings. She's like a German painter, pretty young. Actually, your wife's paintings are like very similar in many ways.
Thank you.
They're really, I've talked about them before. They're really amazing. If anyone has a chance to check them out, then please do. But yeah, like Connie Meyer's artwork, I quite like. And yeah, I have a pretty good friend who's into sort of, yeah, very, very much into the art world, or has been in the past, and he's like collecting stuff.
I think
and,
we have a common friend, or yeah,
I yeah, know who George. You're
speaking about. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So, he kind of puts me onto a lot of things, and, yeah, we have a painting, that we shared together by Weng Shui. I can't remember how you say it exactly. But yeah, they're an artist who's working mostly on aluminium boards, I guess, and acrylic paint, and yeah, also some unique tools. I think they're even like customized dentistry tools to kind of scratch into the metal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And yeah, they're really cool and trippy. And actually, there's, yeah, like some of the paintings feel like they have a bit of a psychedelic kind of an Amazonian sort of edge with like vines and stuff. And they had a show recently at the White Cube, which I didn't manage to check out, but friend George did. So yeah, I have an appreciation for sort of art and photography, I guess. But to be honest, I need to get out and go to more galleries and same. Exhibitions and things like that. It's something that I really enjoy when I do it, but yeah, never kind of bring myself to do it. There's even, you know, still haven't been to some of the main ones in Berlin even.
It's, I mean, the thing is, I think most people listening that live in these cities or at least bigger cities, everybody's like, oh yeah, I've lived here for 20 years and I haven't been to that one museum or that one restaurant that everybody talks about. It's just easy not to be a tourist in your own town.
Yeah, true.
You know, but also I really like the art curation you're doing with the numerous labels you have, which we'll talk about later, but like, is there certain artistic ideas or themes that you're really inspired by right now as far as like artwork for dance music records or stuff like that?
Not really. I mean, yeah, I mean, occasionally sort of see things and be like, oh, that would work really well with this release that I have coming up from that artist. For example, ASEC released a record on the label last year, and Marco Maldarella, I think that's how you pronounce his name. Sorry, Marco, if I said that incorrectly. But yeah, he's doing great stuff in graphic design, working on a lot of projects for our community. And yeah, he did a really great job on the cover for ASEC's record. So I think it's just a matter of like, you know, when you're exposed to stuff, when you see things and you see that it could align with a certain project that you have coming up or a certain producer. I mean, I asked Nathan ASEC like about what he, you know, his ideas, what he could imagine for his cover art. And yeah, he sort of seemed to align with a similar feeling that I had with, you know, Marco's work. And yeah, in that case, it just, everything kind of clicked together really well. And yeah, I'm just kind of always keeping an open eye, trying to sort of see what's going on, and see how I can kind of like bring that into my world or find a way to make it work for an upcoming project or something like that. There's of course like a few people who I've been working with in the past who I know they're really good for a certain thing. For example, with Hayden, I hadn't worked with him for a while, but he did one of the Tracing Circles covers, Xenolith. And yeah, I approached him about the artwork for the album, and yeah, I just thought he'd be really good for that specific project, basically. And yeah, so I think I'm just always keeping like an open eye out there, seeing what's around, what people are up to, whether that's through, you know, just following other labels even, or, you know, seeing things online, and then trying to kind of make some things happen off the back of that.
Yeah, that new which we'll also talk about later, the new Positive Source, the artwork by that Reza.
Yeah, Reza, hasn't he?
Incredible artist.
Yeah, very
super
much.
Super cool. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, there's some people listening and they're just like, yeah, art, I don't care. It's not for everybody. I do think, though, like, if you're a label or a promoter that really wants to get ahead, it's worth investing in, or at least if you don't have the touch for artistic curation, find a friend who does.
Because yeah, for sure.
I would say even especially as promoters, because there's some parties I still go play, and the flyer looks like it was a Photoshop job from 2008 or something, and it's just like, who knows if this gig's going to be any good, because it just feels out of touch. And then there's, you know, you see some flyers for parties where it's like the flyer or the post, whatever, looks so damn cool. And then maybe actually that party's empty or not. But if you
totally get what you mean,
you know, like for example, Club Realm in Amsterdam, they always have crushing artwork, you know, super cool. And I mean, great talent all around. Everything is curated really nicely. But when you see something regularly from a club or a venue or a label, and it's just really striking artwork, and then there's like names you respect attached to it, all of a sudden as the other DJs are like, well, I want to play there. Those people are playing there. The artwork's on fire, or, you know, on the record or something. And then all of a sudden you have more people reaching out to you, you know?
I guess this feeds into the whole sort of social media thing a little bit, like having some sort of visual element to look at and attach, you know, whatever's going on, whether it's an event or like a release. It didn't used to be as important, I think, to have like good art or anything like that. And yeah, maybe some people don't care whether there's good art or not, but
a lot of people don't care, but there are a bunch who do, you know?
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, I mean, good art costs money as well, you know, like, and I mean, it's a really nice thing to have a strong support and visual element for music. Something that stands out, but it's not entirely necessary. And I mean, with like Philippa's label, Forum, the artwork's just like really, really simple. There's nothing really like crazy going on with it, but it's just, yeah, has a bit of a classic sort of techno
kind of
look,
90s
I guess.
Purist look to it.
Yeah, exactly. But then, you know, with Positive Source, we have all this sort of themed, sort of smiley kind of artwork, and a lot of the artworks have actually
raver style, right?
Yeah, raver style. But yeah, a lot of the artworks are actually from very well established contemporary artists that we've been able to license. I mean, yeah, and mostly people have just been kind enough to let us to do it, because, you know, these, some of these people are making like tens of thousands, if not like hundreds of thousands, of like painting sales. Like, it's crazy. So us giving them like a small sort of amount of money is pretty insignificant. So they've just been like really happy to get involved and do it, which, we've really appreciated a lot. And it's been quite a fun kind of process to have that as part of the visual kind of theme with the label. But having a mixture of things that, you know, have good art sometimes, and you're doing something more stripped back and basic. Like, not all of the releases on Blue Hour have some sort of like strong visual cover.
Sure.
Like, a lot of them are just like, you know, quite basic typographic kind of layouts with like a textured background or whatever, and just a couple of different colors to complement it. When it's possible to do something kind of, more visually pleasing, more interesting, more engaging, more special, then it's nice to be able to have those opportunities and to go with it. And just, it doesn't always happen for every release, basically.
You can't win them all. Yeah. I mean, there's sometimes like I try hard with Enemy, and some of the artwork I'm like, yeah, this is so badass, and other ones I'm like, oh man, this sucks, but the budget is tapped, so this is what it's gonna be. And you know, probably I'm the only one that gives a shit, but I care. All right, well, you brought up the other labels, so let's just jump into it. You know, sure. You have Blue Hour.
Yeah.
Philippa Pacho, who we keep referencing, she has Forum, and you share
Positive Source together.
How do you determine what comes out on what label, and is there something you're looking for?
I help Philippa with Forum a little bit. It's ultimately her thing, so she has last say, but I sort of offer ideas and suggest people, and kind of help a little bit with the A&R process, if we can call it that still. But I think like with Philippa, for example, her profile is very aligned quite strongly with sort of, contemporary techno, I guess. And with Positive Source, it's more of like a fun thing that we're attempting to try. And we kind of started the label in the pandemic to try and bring people together from different sides of our scene. So it's a really mixed and diverse label sonically. And yeah, obviously the artwork supports this kind of like fun, sort of ravey sort of theme. And for that, like, it's mostly VAs. We have done solo EPs as well from Regent and Kolos. But yeah, mostly it's been VAs, and the style has sort of tightened up a little bit more as we've gone on. It's sort of become a bit more aligned with techno, I guess, than sort of very broad styles that are adjacent to techno, whether that's trance or a bit more like housey sort of things. But yeah, we just announced the 9th release, which will come out next month, I guess.
Okay.
And
who's on that one?
Who have we got? We've got make sure I don't say something wrong.
That's all right.
So Siphonophora, they are a producer from the Netherlands, and previously under the name of Deep Sea Beast.
Okay.
Had a couple of, or maybe one or two releases on Float. Yeah, so they're on the record, Biderben, Introversion, and Aero. So that's going to be a VA.
Okay.
Strong and that's names. The one with the artwork from Reza Hasni as well.
Excellent.
And yeah, so that's a bit of a mixed bag, actually. It's got like, I said that we're like maybe more aligning with techno, but actually I completely contradict myself with that. It's quite a fun sounding, colourful, bright record. Has a bit of like a catchy sort of vibe across some of the tracks. So yeah, with Positive Source, I think like we're just trying to be experimental, fun, like, you know, those we were talking about earlier about the tracks which are like the more risky tracks to pull out of the bag when you're like playing or something like that. And I think that's how we kind of approach the label as well, to like not try and release tracks that feel too generic. There's something a bit more special about them, and they kind of sit in their own kind of world. And so that's basically like how we approach the label. And
like time and place tracks,
and just like stuff that kind of is a bit more risk taking in its kind of style, and less kind of generic, I suppose. And then with Blue Hour, I mean, really like diverse as well, I guess, especially over the last few years and surrounding the 10-year anniversary compilation Omni, but has a bit more of like a serious sort of side to it, serious edge, serious sort of sound. I think that would be the main difference between Blue Hour and Positive Source. Maybe it has like a bit more of a, I don't know,
getting down
like
to business,
a bit more
type
of like
thing,
a mature or like slightly more sophisticated vibe, maybe. You guys be the judge of that.
Fair enough.
I mean, this year there's not actually that much stuff happening on the label apart from surrounding the album, because I wanted to try and make and create a bit of space for that. There will be some remixes of the album that will come out, the first batch probably later in the year, but yeah, too early to reveal any further details on that.
Understandable. Cool. And then as far as like, you know, both you and Flip are on the road quite a bit lately. How are you feeling about DJing right now? And like, do you feel like there's a techno overload at home right now? Because you're both diving in deep, or?
Not really. I mean, the big change has definitely been, you know, how much Philip has blown up over the last kind of few years. It's literally gone from like zero to 100 in a really short space of time. And there was obviously some challenging aspects to that for her in terms of like just the schedule that she was on and making sure that she was getting enough rest and things like that. But this is our life, like, really. And it's something that, you know, like, we're very used to and feels very kind of normal, like having this sort of engagement with the techno world and it being at home and in our space. But it's not like we're like constantly listening to techno at home or anything like that, but we realize that, you know, this is the world that we live in and the lives that we're living, and it just feels kind of very normal. So I don't think it like really intrudes into our kind of life so much, or private life so much. It's just part of it and accepted. But you know, we make sure that we're getting plenty of rest and eating well. And I think this helps to kind of make the whole thing more manageable. I mean, I'm not gigging as much as Philippa is. I think like it's amazing how she, you know, and how others, you know, play like 10, 12 times a month. It's crazy. Insane.
I mean, you got to hit it when you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, some people are just like geared up for that sort of, they can do it like, mm-hmm. and just get through it. I mean, there's been times where I've been like super kind of busy. You know, I'm not sure if I ever had like 12 gigs in a month though. That's quite a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think when you're in it, like, even if you've got like a lot of stuff that month, there's this sort of, you just roll into it and you just get through it. And, you know, if I'm like touring in Asia or something, there will be like, you know, back-to-back gigs, you know, long flights and, challenging sort of sleeping hours, time zone shifts, things like that. Some people are more adaptable than that than others. But, I think what's important is just to, just be kind to your body during the times when you can't be, for whatever reason, whether that's lack of sleep or, you know, having a few drinks or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, I totally get it. I mean, especially as you get older, you kind of have to be proactive about things, especially if it gets crazy. I mean, I've had periods where I've had a ton of gigs a month, and then I've had periods where there's zero.
Mm.
For me, I think the sweet spot's like four or five. These days, I have zero interest in playing more than that. Of course, if they come in, you really have to consider it because that's money.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
But like, I find that I'm the happiest and most pleasant to be around if I get four or five. Yeah,
yeah, you know, that's like kind of my sweet spot as well. I think for sure, it's a healthy amount to be playing and without doing too much damage to yourself, basically.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, while I do love this music, I don't want to be in a nightclub 8+ days a month anymore.
No
shade to anybody who is currently or really enjoys it. I just I know it would only lead to self-destruction. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So, but as far as DJing goes, how are you having good gigs lately or anything? Or
yeah, so I took a bit of time out over the last sort of 4 weeks. Everything was quite well synced actually with my calendar. I just had like a small operation on my nose for my breathing. So I haven't actually had a gig for 4 or 5 weeks. But yeah, kicking back off this weekend. Going to go to Karlsruhe tomorrow.
For GoTech or what you
know? No, it's another club, C2 Ost.
Okay.
I wasn't quite sure like about it because I hadn't heard of it before. I thought, oh, maybe it's some sort of random German small town club. But I was speaking to Sam Satok Mas yesterday and mentioned that this venue, and he said he played it and said it was really good. Hopefully it's going to be a good one. And then next week got a gig in town here, Malayunta. Big shout out to the guys. And Berghain next month, doing like a May Day back to back with Audrey Danza for the Sound Metaphors party at Club Ost. And we'll go over to Kyiv as well, to Kaledyska 41, And
yeah, they keep reaching out to me. I just, you know, I got family that's like, that's really crazy to go to a war zone, but I want to do it. I just, you know, I need to convince the people in my life that it's a good move.
I haven't played there yet, but I did go to Kyiv for Veselka, and it was in this sort of former kind of opera house building, and that was a couple of years ago. So yeah, during all this stuff that's going on, and I was a bit nervous about it, of course, but I had such an amazing experience. It was so good. And you know, there was some stuff going on. I think that weekend there was quite heavy bombardments.
Did you hear anything, or could you or
sirens?
Just,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, okay. No, like explosions, but sirens. And
was it alarming, or were you just like, that sounds far enough away that I don't have to worry?
Well, you download this app. It's like a kind of warning kind of app. And on the first night after taking this 24-hour train from like Berlin, stopped in Prague, and then Prague to Przemyśl or whatever, like a Polish border town with Ukraine, and then another kind of train. So it was a really long journey. So it's pretty knackered when you arrive anyway. And then just grabbed some food with my host and went to the hotel and tried to get some sleep, and then the phone just started going off in sirens, and I was like, okay, I better go down to the hotel shelter, and just went down to the basement. They have like a place where you can go, and just realized no one else was coming. Basically, I was just there. I just felt like such an idiot, just sitting down there for like a couple of minutes being like, okay. So I just walked back up, went to the reception. I was asked the reception about it, and
they're just used
to
it.
Like, it's super chilled about everything. It's amazing, really. And everyone's just got so used to things, obviously, and understands, like, you know, what has like a better gauge on what is, you know, concerning and what is not, I guess. And then just, went back to my hotel room, put in my earplugs, like had a sleeping pill, turned off my phone, deleted the app or whatever. And then, that was it. I think you just have to adapt. And but people there, obviously, quite used to it. Very unfortunate still, but if you just go in there, it might be a bit strange for the weekend or the couple of days that you're there. But I had such an amazing time, met so many beautiful people, like just the courage and that people have to keep normality going there is like really admirable. And walked around, went to some record shops, museums and stuff, really nice places to hang out, eat, have coffee. Life goes on, you know. And
I mean, if it doesn't, then you've lost, right? You know, it's a hard concept to get around, but like you have to live. Life has to be worth living.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going back there. Of course, there'll probably be some nerves, but I'm very excited as well. And I think on, you know, you could get really kind of worried or think about worst case scenario things happening, but the likelihood is still very low. I mean, you can just get hit by a car walking down the street in Berlin, just
exactly.
As easy, probably.
I've done enough stupid stuff that I've really tempted fate. Thankfully, not much lately.
Yeah.
You want to talk about studio stuff for a minute?
Yeah, can do. I mean, I'm having space now, just letting the album sort of settle. So I'm not actually active right now working on music, but
well,
I definitely feel very encouraged by the idea of like working in longer kind of formats in the future. And I think also for the label, this is much more appealing now to try and push artists that I'm working with or find new artists who can kind of present a longer format project, something that has sort of more depth and storytelling behind it. And I guess like with Selva, it's just sort of opened up that aspect of the label and a new way for it to grow and develop. And I go through phases of like not writing music for long periods then I kind of have to build up some sort of inner kind of feeling of motivation and have to kind of process a lot or let something settle that I've done in the past before I can kind of visit the next thing.
Sure.
But yeah, at the moment, just like letting the album do its thing. And yeah, we'll jump back into the next thing as and when I'm ready to, I guess.
You were saying that the album process, you kind of did a bunch of it on the road. So I guess essentially that means you were doing it mostly in the box.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I did basically, I would say 95% even just fully in the box, which
okay,
which is an area that I'm pretty comfortable with. I mean, I do have like some hardware, but I'm rather than kind of running a full kind of like hardware setup, I'm more like I'll go to a specific machine to do a certain thing, record it, and then bring it into the project rather than have all this stuff kind of synced up and like recording in that way, basically. So just as and when I need something, I'll like pull it out of the studio or use it. But yeah, this was done basically 100% in the box and mostly on headphones as well, actually, which I think
nice ones or just whatever.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay-ish ones. Beyerdynamic 1770 Pro.
Okay.
The closed ones.
Okay.
I do have like a really nice pair of headphones from Head. The Headphone 2s. But they're so detailed and rich. And I just felt more comfortable on the Beyerdynamics because that's what I've been using for a long time. And of course, like I was referencing on some other sort of speakers and things like that. But yeah, actually, I didn't really visit my physical studio, which I have outside of the house at all, really, during the process.
Damn.
Which is, yeah, I'm not sure.
Did you do the mixdowns there, though, or not even?
Not really, no.
Wow. I mean, you always have really solid mixdowns, whether it's the Blue Hour stuff, Tracing Circles, or whatever.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
do you get really anal or not really? Do you get really anal about it or not really?
I actually find mixing, like, quite challenging and quite hard. I think I can get it to a reasonable kind of level. It's just that last kind of 20% of kind of perfecting. I find when I try and get into that area to kind of make it the best it can be, I think that's when things can easily fall apart as well. So I just tried to bring the album up to a level in the mixing sort of style without completely destroying it. Hopefully I didn't destroy it. I don't think I did.
I think so.
It's definitely more than passable. But, you know, like listening back to it, I think there were, you know, and I think with anything that you do, there's always going to be certain ideas that you have about, oh, maybe this could have been changed slightly or that, or like, oh, the kick is too dominant or like could be more beefed up or, you know, something sounds too resonant or, you know, whatever. Like, it's never going to be perfect. And I think part of the process of, you know, doing this is learning just to accept imperfection and knowing when to stop before, like, you kind of end up kind of, yeah, ruining or destroying something, basically. So I think I've found the right balance to sort of leave it where it is. Yeah, and yeah, maybe I'll revisit the mixdowns at another point later on and tweak them. I don't know, but they are where they are for the moment, and that's fine by me.
I think you did totally fine in that regard, so I wouldn't worry about that too much. You want to talk about Ripple?
So yeah, Ripple is like a small music promotion company that I started just over a year ago. And it kind of came about from, I guess, sort of doing a pretty decent job promoting my own labels and building up a vast contact list over the last 15 years in the industry, even before doing Blue Hour stuff. So yeah, I kind of had the idea to offer this as a service to others and not just use what I'd built up for my own purpose and my own labels, I guess. So yeah, I started working with some other labels to promote their releases. And I'm using InFlight, which is like the delivery platform to send the promos, which I find is a really great interface and product for people to like play back tracks. You get good analytical reports, different download options. It's a great tool to use. Similar to FatDrop, but has like some different features like radio tracking, playlist tracking, things like that, when you actually add the ISRC codes in, which I think is pretty useful and good to see, because sometimes you just miss stuff. And if you just see that like it's getting positioned and placed in different places, then you just get to know it through the InFlight platform, basically. So that's a really cool feature. And I'm pretty casual about like, you know, what kind of Ripple is, and it's not like a business idea and concept that I'm really like pushing super hard. It's just something which is quite fun to like do on the side and to help others promote and get their music out to like a good list of contacts. And it's a little side hustle, basically, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Nice.
So if anyone needs any help promoting their releases, then reach out.
That's right. I mean, you got the list. Go for it. Obviously, you have an album to plug, partially why you're here. Is there anything else, like other podcasts coming up, interviews, tours this spring?
We talked about, there's an interview on Juno Daily, which was published last week. The album's actually out today. By the time you guys listen to this, I guess it might have been out like a week or so, maybe. There's another interview in an Italian online magazine called Parquet Channel. And I will have another feature coming up for another magazine, 4/4. But that's not out yet. Maybe by the time you guys are listening to this, that will already be out as well. So check that out. As I said, like just trying to create space for the album to do its thing. There's not really much else to announce on the labels other than, what I mentioned earlier with Positive Source. The next release has just been announced, number 9. And later in the year, there'll be some remixes. Got some nice gigs coming up that I mentioned earlier. You know, always excited to play Berghain, and looking forward to go over to Kyiv as well again. Heard a lot about K41, and really excited to play there and see it in the flesh for myself. There's a couple of like other things coming up over the summer, playing in Lux Festival in Switzerland. Heading over to London in June, Smart Athens as well. So some cool stuff coming up. And I hope to see some of you there.
Awesome. As for myself, I think I have one in a few weeks, but I don't know if they've actually announced it yet. So I'll stay tuned on the social media channels. Aside from that, I got Pax Romana in Amsterdam. I got Berghain coming up again. That's going to be a long one. Forget my drift. Trezor West in Dortmund. And then, there's going to be some more US dates that I can announce pretty shortly, probably the next episode. Nice. So that's about it for me. You got anything else you want to say?
Thanks for having me, Dustin. Always a pleasure, mate.
Thanks for coming over. Thank you for the record, and good luck with the album.
Nice one.
Bye-bye. Peace.